From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. We got a great show for you today. Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri will be joining us later, but frankly, I'm having trouble concentrating on the show. We are in Chicago, as you know, and as I'm sure you heard, in the end, we did not get the Olympic Games in 2016. I know. And all week long, we all had the Olympic fever. Turns out it was just swine flu. Even worse, Carl and I were so excited, we've been training for months to compete in the new men's synchronized swimming competition. We even picked out matching suits and swim caps.
Now, can I take my cap off? It makes my head hurt.
Oh, go ahead, Carl, but leave the swimsuit on. You, however, don't need any training to play our games. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Stephen from Eugene, Oregon.
Hey, Stephen, how are you?
Doing great.
That's good. What do you do there in Eugene? Beautiful place.
Well, I'm a freelance writer and a massage therapist.
A freelance writer and massage therapist.
Yes, I usually pretend I'm typing on people's back.
Do you really?
No, not really.
That'd be fun, though. Well, welcome to the show, Stephen. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and author of the new book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hello,
Charlie. Hi. That's a great idea you have, because you could, like, hit a guy's actual colon with a semicolon.
I thought about that, actually, once, yeah.
Oh!
Next, it's a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Kiri, how are you?
And finally, say hello to a humorist and author of the new book, Driving Like Crazy, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Oh, my favorite.
Thank you, Stephen.
Stephen, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will now read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
No, you bet.
All right. Here is your first quote.
I would make the case in Copenhagen personally if I weren't so firmly committed to making the promise of quality, affordable health care for every American.
That was somebody saying he wouldn't go to Copenhagen to beg the IOC for the Olympics in Chicago, but he decided to go anyway. Who was it?
That would be President Obama.
It would be, yes. Very good. People are wondering why President Obama left the country to advocate for Chicago when he should have been here working on behalf of America. It is true, of course, that Chicago is still a colony here on Lake Michigan. We export kielbasa and bad baseball teams for you to beat to the mother country. But we do hope someday we'll be allowed into the Union. Anyway, off he went along with Oprah Winfrey, who critics charged was leaving the country, even though many here were not yet living their best life ever. But you can bet the IOC members were swayed by her when she told them to look under the seats and each found the keys to an American car company. Anyway, as we now know, none of it worked. Chicago got burned. Again. Even though we're used to it, it still stung. Imagine how great it would have been. Gymnastics judges would have held aloft numbers, not indicating the scores, but the amount of the bribes. We would have had new sports like long-distance weather enduring. And the triathlon would have been three different events, you know, beer drinking, sausage eating, and Senate seat selling. And as for the medals, they would have been different for the Chicago Games. Bronze, silver, and bleeping golden. So, your next quote is a book title.
Going Rogue, An American Life.
That's the title of a soon-to-be-published memoir, which is already a bestseller, pre-publication, on Amazon.com. By whom?
Well, that would be lovely former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin.
Yes, indeed, Sarah Palin. Now, the book, Ms. Palin says, was written in just 4 months, although Governor Palin... Hey!
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Just because you
Common sense got caught in my throat there for a minute.
Look, pal, just because you don't have her discipline and stick-to-itiveness, okay?
Four months? She couldn't get to a verb in 4 months.
All right. Well, it is true. Governor Palin did have help when she was told she'd be getting a ghostwriter. She was resistant at first. She said, wait, does Casper write books? No, Mrs. Palin, it's not that kind of ghost. The governor dictated a lot of the book into a tape recorder, which is why the first chapter is titled, Hello, is this thing on? Damn it, Todd, how do you work this?
Get one of the kids to fix it.
Advance buzz is that it's actually a serious, even scholarly book. It's even got a bibliography.
Come on.
No, it's got a bibliography listing all periodicals cited in the text. It reads, quote, all of them. I hope she writes another. By the way, did you know this? The title of the book, Going Rogue, did you know this, was a critical comment attributed to a member of the McCain campaign. They said, she's going rogue on us. That explains the other provisional title, Oh Dear God, What Have We Done?
Well, did you see the I think it was the ABC guy who read the title wrong and said it was Going Rouge? Which is actually a way better title.
Here we go. Stephen, your last quote comes from a certain gaffe-prone world leader.
He's a wife. It's also a suntanned.
There he is. He was adding some flourish to a remark he'd made about President Obama back in November. Who?
Gaffe-prone... Oh, my gosh, I'm not sure. Did his translator happen to run out on him at some point?
No. He actually said that.
That's the other gaffe.
Yeah, different guy.
It's really,
different guy.
I mean, gaffe-prone national leader is like narrowing it down a lot.
Give it a hint. Here we go. I have a hint for you.
Okay.
It sounds less stupidly racist in the original Italian.
Well, then that must have been Berlusconi.
Yeah, it was, in fact, Berlusconi.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your weekly Berlusconi here.
Exactly.
Where would we be without him?
Back in November, right after President Obama was elected, Berlusconi referred to him humorously, he thought, as suntanned, to considerable outrage. This week, he did it again. It seems like while Berlusconi can't commit to a single woman, when he falls in love with a racial slur, it's forever. He said, quote, after coming back from the G20, he said, quote, I bring you greetings from a person who is suntanned, Barack Obama. He then added the comment about the first lady. Maybe he thought people were upset the first time just because he'd omitted to mention Michelle. No, he made that statement, those statements about the Obamas, in front of a crowd of hundreds who cheered him. But it wasn't because they approved his tasteless comments. They were just happy to see the man who had fathered all of them. Now, we went back and we looked at the photographs of Michelle and Barack Obama meeting all the world leaders. And this is true. In all the meetings with the other world leaders, Michelle Obama gave them all a big hug. And Berlusconi, she's just shaking his hand. And if you look closely, you can see her other hand reaching into her purse for the pepper spray.
I thought she was reaching in for the hand sanitizer.
That too, yeah.
Carl, how did Stephen do in our quiz?
Peter, Stephen did great. He had 3 correct answers. So, Stephen, you win our prize.
Yay!
All right.
Well done.
Yay! Okay.
Well done, Stephen. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, Newt Gingrich has set up a foundation to reward innovative, independent entrepreneurs, but one of the winners of his Entrepreneur of the Year award was told that Mr. Gingrich was taking the award back because somebody noticed her groundbreaking independent business was what?
Now, this is a very confusing one, Peter, because the first one was a porn merchant.
Yes.
And they pulled that back.
Yes, but...
Undaunted, the latest one owned a strip club.
That's right. Newt Gingrich loves scrappy, pull-yourself-up-by-your-bootstraps type of business success
stories.
Pull
yourself up on the pole.
But if your success involves slowly removing those bootstraps, Mr. Gingrich was preparing to honor a woman named Dawn Rizzo. She's the owner of The Lodge, a small business in Dallas, when he found out it was a topless bar, and he took the award back. As you say, this is the second time in the last month or so.
Now, it took Newt 6 visits.
Yes. He had to examine carefully what the business was.
Because, you know, there's always a chance that her blouse just fell off.
Well, you see, this is, in fact, last month, Gingrich's organization named a producer of adult movies his Entrepreneur of the Year, so it's the second time they've embarrassed themselves. Gingrich's organization says they've sorted out all the confusion. They're looking forward to presenting next month's winner, filmmaker Roman Polanski.
I knew there was a Roman Polanski joke in there somewhere.
He was
fighting to get out, wasn't it? Peter, who was it that said about Roman Polanski? I wish I could claim this. I can't. That he was the original 5-foot pole you wouldn't touch anything with.
Thank you. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Shannon in Brooklyn.
Hey, Shannon, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. What do you do in Brooklyn?
I work for a company that does professional e-marketing for arts and nonprofits, like the New York Phil, Patron Technology.
Oh, wow. So you do e-marketing for companies.
That's exactly right.
Right. Do you, the kind of person who adds E as a prefix to a lot of the things that you do?
I try not to.
Yeah. Well, welcome to our show, Shannon. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Shannon's topic?
Disorder in the court.
Americans love legal dramas, the majesty of the judge's bench, the tension of the cross-examination, the nervous confession from the witness stand. But this week we read a story proving justice can sometimes be a little bit dorky. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories of bumbling in the courtroom. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. First up, let's hear from P.J. O'Rourke.
Federal court judge Clayton Carswell has come under fire for dismissing a jury during a securities fraud trial in New York. The reason? Jury members sequestered for the weekend were offered a wide variety of movies on DVD. The jury became hopelessly deadlocked on the question of whether to watch He's Just Not That Into You or Transformers. Judge Carswell reportedly exploded, saying, "This is one of the most complex cases I have encountered in my 28 years on the bench. A jury that can't decide between He's Just Not That Into You and Transformers can't decide anything, not to mention what picking either of those movies says about their intelligence." Dismissed jurors are considering suing for defamation, but as one jury member put it, "We just can't decide."
A jury dismissed because they couldn't decide on what movie to watch while sequestered. Your next story of a courtroom snafu comes from Charlie Pierce.
Judge Herman Belencewicz of the Door County Court of Probate in Wisconsin was fed up with the behavior of plaintiffs, defendants, and their attorneys in divorce actions that came before him, but was constrained from punishing them in a way appropriate to their offenses. Then it came to him. Belencewicz, who also works as a field judge for local high school football games, now whenever someone in his court misbehaves, he reaches down to his desk and throws a red penalty flag onto the floor. The offenders have a choice, a formal sanction of contempt and a fine, or an ad hoc fine. For minor offenses, this is $5. For more serious ones, $15. This money is donated to local children's services charities. The local bar association, alas, has no sense of humor. It complained to the state court of appeals, and the judge was sanctioned and suspended from the bench for 10 days, just in time to work the Heartland Arrowhead Wauwatosa East game.
A judge in Wisconsin uses his techniques from the football field and gets in trouble. And your last story of a legal misstep comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Ouch! Oh, jeez! Ew! Blood! Do you think I need a tetanus shot? Oh, wait! Again! Ow! Such was the outcry in a New York courtroom last week, where a motion was thrown out partly because the filing papers were so badly stapled they were a multi-pronged menace. Supreme Court Judge Charles Markey tossed out an auto accident case after a court clerk was bloodied twice by the spawn of the swing line from hell. The lawyer, Jeffrey Hirsch, countered that he had a pretty good stapling record 5,000 filings and really little or no loss of life. But have no fear, Lady Justice is not in need of a transfusion. The case lives on under a separate, neatly stapled filing.
All right, let's review your choices. One of these three things happened. From PGO O'Rourke, a jury being dismissed because they simply couldn't decide on what movie to watch overnight. From Charlie Pierce, a judge getting in trouble because he decided to run his courtroom in Wisconsin like a high school football field. And from Kiri O'Connor, a bad stapling job contributing to a motion being tossed out of court. Which of these is the real story?
Oh, wow. They all sound so ridiculous. I think I'm going to have to go with the third one about the staples.
Really?
Story.
Why?
Because I was a paralegal for a little while, and that sounds exactly like the kind of thing that would happen.
And you still show the scars.
All right. I still do.
Well, that's your choice. Kiri's story about the staples. Well, okay. To bring you the correct answer, we spoke with a reporter who covered the real story.
The judge said that the poor stapling actually caused physical injury, but the attorney for the plaintiff told us this is the first time he's ever had complaints about the way he staples court documents.
That was Chris Fisher, editor-in-chief of the New York Law Journal, which reported on the staple decision. Congratulations, Shannon.
Yay.
You got it right. You're the point for Kiri O'Connor. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Great. Congrats, Kiri.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Congratulations to you, too.
Thanks so much.
Well done, and thanks for playing.
Now it's a legal matter, baby. You got me on the run. It's a legal matter, baby. A legal matter from now on.
And now the game where distinguished people try to distinguish themselves even further by playing Not My Job. This week, we are very pleased to welcome to our show the junior senator from the great state of Missouri, elected to her first term in 2006, Senator Claire McCaskill. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Now, Senator, by my count, you're our fifth sitting senator to be on the show, but I think that you have an advantage over any of them in that this is not your first time in a game show. Is that correct?
No, I'm kind of a professional.
Oh, really? What was your experience?
Well, I got out of law school, and I was so far in debt, and I had always watched game shows. So I planned my first vacation as a young lawyer to go out to Los Angeles, and I tried out for three or four game shows, got on one, and was a four-day champion of the game show, the precursor for Alex Trebek, a game show called High Rollers.
Really?
Yeah.
And what was the challenge on that game show?
You had to answer questions, and if you got the question right, if you were the first one to answer the question correctly, then you controlled the dice, and you rolled these big fuzzy dice and pulled numbers off the board, and with each number you pulled off the board, you got the prize associated with that number.
Right. Well, what did you win?
I won a bunch of stuff, a trip to Italy, and a fur coat, and a diamond necklace, and about $35,000 worth of stuff. It was great. It paid off all my student loans from law school.
Wait a minute. What did you do, hawk the stuff?
Of course. I sold it.
Really? You're not still walking around the Senate chamber with your fur coat and diamond necklace?
No, it's not exactly election year material.
You should, though. It'd make Bernie Sanders all mad.
It certainly would.
That'd be great. Now it's hard sometimes, of course, for junior senators to make a mark in that august body, but we know you have established yourself, gained fame as the best and most consistent Twitterer in the U.S. Senate.
Well, and I'm not sure what kind of laudatory award I should get for that, but it's great. I like tweeting.
You like tweeting?
I do.
You don't mind saying that sentence, I like tweeting?
It is a little embarrassing.
Kind of hard to imagine Daniel Webster saying that.
Or Harry Truman.
True, but there you are. And you're known for tweeting. Do you get any grief about it? Does anybody say this isn't senatorial? Or have you ever said anything on your Twitter feed you shouldn't have?
No, I think I'm pretty careful. I try to be authentic. I think I'm different than most people who tweet in Congress in that I do it myself.
Do you really?
Yeah, it causes my staff heartburn. But I think it's kind of neat that I can say what I'm thinking and not be edited by anyone. So
and they're terrified by that fact.
They are terrified by that. And so are the other senators, by the way.
Oh, really?
Wait a minute. Hold on. You're telling me that senators have, like, tweet aids?
They do.
Really?
Tweets.
Well, they call themselves communication staff.
No, wait a minute. You've been sitting there. You've been Twittering. I follow you on Twitter. I know how often you tweet. You must have made some errors. Come on now.
Well, I have. Once or twice I've said something that was just wrong. And then there's been a couple of times that I probably engaged with hateful, mean people when I shouldn't have.
Who, like John Boehner? No, sorry.
But all in all, I think it's kind of a neat way to communicate to people in Missouri. Kind of cool.
And you did make an interesting tweet about healthcare a little while ago. You were going, I think, meant to talk about the public option. But it didn't quite come out.
Oh, yes, that was embarrassing. Yeah. I left a letter out.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm betting it's not the TN option.
And that's exactly right. It was not the TN option.
It was great, though, because it ended up with Senator Orrin Hatch denouncing the Democrats for advancing a pubic option,
exactly.
Which he thought was
exactly
inappropriate.
No family values.
No family values at all. And you make them, and you're not like, oh boy, there's the headline in tomorrow's St. Louis paper.
And on the other hand, though, David Vitter saw it as an excellent opportunity for bipartisanship.
Oh, you're going to get in trouble for laughing at that.
I'm
the chambers tomorrow.
I'm just giggling.
All right, giggling is fine. And you're like, David, I just giggled, really.
Honestly,
I didn't want to be rude. Honestly. Now, another thing, I'm not sure if this is unique in the Senate, it sounds like it might be, is that you were a cheerleader.
You know, I'm not sure that that's unique. We have a lot of women now. I'm willing to bet that
Trent
Kay Hagan.
Trent Lott
was a cheerleader.
The previous president of the United States was a cheerleader.
That's right, but you're right.
And they
Trent
both
Lott.
Look terrible in skirts, I gotta say.
But maybe it's common. Maybe there are cheerleaders in high office. Does your cheerleading background give you any advantages as you negotiate the Byzantine ways of the Senate?
I'll tell you what. I lost out as cheerleader for my senior year in high school, and I thought the world had ended. And that's the year I started debating and doing speech contests. So maybe my lack of skills in cheerleading is what brought me here, huh?
Well, wait a minute. You're telling me that incisive, rational analysis is more useful in American politics than mindless enthusiasm? I don't think so.
Go healthcare.
I don't think you're right there, Senator.
Go healthcare.
Go healthcare. Give me an H.
That's right.
Let's talk about healthcare. It's so complicated. Have you been dealing with the same pressures from left and right that everybody else has? You had town meetings. You were very adamant about going ahead and doing them, right? How were they?
Yeah, I did attend across the state in all different parts of the state, and you know some were rough. People are upset. You know, Missourians are they're pretty thoughtful folks, and they want you to be straightforward and tell them what you really think, and if they disagree with you, they'll live with it as long as you don't play games with them and try to rationalize it and beat around the bush. But we're going to figure this out. I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to end up with a good bill that the American people in the long run are going to be very grateful for. I really do think we'll get a good bill.
Among your other interests, in addition to politics and policy, is sports. As everybody knows, if somebody plays in Missouri, you're a fan. Right?
True.
Have you ever given in to that political temptation and made a dumb symbolic bet with another politician over a team?
I have.
Well, what have you bet?
I bet Ben Nelson ribs versus Omaha Steaks over the Missouri-Nebraska football game a couple of years ago. And I collected steaks. And by the way, I offered him up like sides of these gorgeous ribs from Kansas City, and he sent me like two little bitty ribeyes from Omaha. And I just like wouldn't let him up. I said, "You are the cheapest person I have ever encountered in my life."
Some and Democratic finally, voters feel the same way, by the way.
Finally, he sent me more steaks just to shut me up.
Really?
Yeah.
You extorted more steaks out of Ben Nelson?
I did.
Good for you.
I did.
I think that's cool. Have you ever lost one of those bets?
You know, I really, I haven't done it very often. I think that's the only one I can remember. And I won that one. Maybe that's why I remember it.
There
I
you go. One last question. The New York Times listed you as among the 17 women most likely to become president. So any ambition?
Only 17?
Only 17.
I really like my job. I get to sit in Harry Truman's desk and I'm doing a lot of stuff that I enjoy. It's intellectually challenging, and you really do have to be a little bit crazy to want to run for president. It's a nutty deal.
That would explain a lot.
It would.
Well, Senator McCaskill, we're delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You're not really going to make me say this line, are you?
This week, seemingly devoid of holidays, had a great one. September 30th, Wednesday, was International Blasphemy Day. And as part of our annual celebration,
oh,
it's our favorite
God.
Holiday. Exactly.
That's great.
We're going to ask you three questions about blasphemy.
I love blasphemy.
Get two right, you'll win a prize. One of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Get all three right, and you'll be in big trouble. Ready
all
to
right.
play? Ready to
I'm
play?
I'm ready.
All right. Carl, who is Senator Claire McCaskill playing for?
Peter, the senator is playing for Howard Luby of Birmingham, Michigan.
All right. First question. You may think that blasphemy in the Western world went out with witchcraft trials, but no. In 1967, in Britain, a book of cartoons was accused by some of blasphemous content. How did the book's publisher react to the charge? A, by having the most blasphemous cartoon tattooed right on his chest. B, by changing the name in the offending cartoon's captions from Jesus to Tony. Or C, by sneaking into the book warehouse, taking all the copies, and burning them personally.
Oh, my goodness. I got to go with Tony.
You're going to go with Tony?
Yeah.
Guy up in the cross. Oh, Tony, look. That's your choice?
I think so.
No, it was actually C. He burned them. The book was called Massacre. It was a book of cartoons by a French cartoonist. And the head of Penguin Books, which published it, responded to the first criticisms of its content by personally stealing and burning all of the copies.
Oh, goodness.
Wow. Booksellers were then told the book was out of stock. Next question. One of the most entertaining bits of blasphemy, in my opinion, over the last few decades was Monty Python's Life of Brian. That movie was banned in many countries. They came up with the idea to parody the Gospels when what happened? A, John Cleese's mother said to him, "Oh, John, you think you're so shocking, but really, you could never do anything to offend me." B, when Eric Idle, tired of being asked what their next project would be, began to answer, "Jesus Christ's lust for glory." Or C, they were trying to come up with an idea, and just as they were about to give up, a Jehovah's Witness came to the door.
Oh, my goodness. Should I say, oh, my God.
Well, that would be appropriate.
I think it may be, it is B.
You're B, Jesus Christ's lust for glory. You're right. Very good. That's what happened. They were producing Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and they were constantly being asked what their next project would be. And Eric Idle started saying, "Jesus Christ's lust for glory," just to shut them up. And then they started to think, "Hey, wait a minute." All right, this is very exciting. You get this last one, you will be the winner. Blasphemy was a crime in Britain until 2005, but was finally taken off the books after everyone was embarrassed by a blasphemy charge made against what? A, Jerry Springer, the opera. B, a TV station that was showing Benny Hill show reruns. Or C, a line of greeting cards.
Oh. Let's try A.
Jerry Springer, the opera?
Yeah.
You're right. Very good. After the opera was broadcast on the BBC, a Christian group filed a blasphemy complaint saying that in the opera, quote, "Christ is shown apparently wearing a nappy, swearing, saying that he's a little bit gay, while God is portrayed as an ineffectual old fool," unquote. The case was dismissed, and everyone in Britain was so embarrassed, they struck down the blasphemy laws soon thereafter. Carl, how did Claire McCaskill do in our quiz?
Peter, the senator had two correct answers, so she wins for Howard Luby.
Well done, Senator.
All right.
Yeah. Well done.
Now, Phil. Get Carl.
Claire McCaskill is the junior senator from the state of Missouri. Senator McCaskill, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
This has been great fun.
Well, thank you so much, Senator. We're really a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
Good luck to you in the rest of the term.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on.
Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl plays his favorite Ryman and Garfunkel album in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. PJ, this week the Internet claimed another victim as the Wisconsin Tourism Federation became the latest organization to change its name. Why?
Wisconsin Tourism Association.
I'm sorry, it's the Wisconsin Tourism Federation. Wisconsin Tourism
Wisconsin.
Federation.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're asking PJ this. You still write on like wet clay and cuneiform, so you're not going to be up on this.
Well, it's easy to erase wet clay.
I know. Yeah, you know. Revise.
I mean, you know, the wool, like, you know, nobody ever comes back at you years later with a piece of clay that you put cuneiform in and says, you know.
Yeah, it's true. There's evidence. You wrote this? Anyway,
so. No, so this is probably WTF spells something that probably means something to you people.
Yes, yes. Exactly right. WTF, PJ.
There means something to those people who are trying to watch you answer this question.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
All those people.
WTF is the problem. When it was founded back in 1979, no one at the WTF could have imagined that their innocent name would one day become an obscene shorthand for surprise. But now everybody.
I get it.
There he goes.
Yes, I get it.
But now,
I get it.
Now, there he goes.
You know.
So you're thinking,
You know, this is just, it's lost on me. I mean, for one thing, I'm of an age where if I want to say WTF, I say WTF.
Yeah, yeah.
Do folks really communicate to each other with things like WTF? What happened to, you know, very truly yours? You know, your obedient servant.
Your obedient servant? I haven't written to the Continental Congress in a while.
No. Oh, no, nowadays we just type YOS, really. It saves time. It's... PJ, a new study in the Journal of Social Evolutionary and Cultural Psychology finds that when men are hungry... It's not just their attitudes about food that are influenced. No, hungry men are also more likely to be interested in what?
Well, Peter, this is, you know, sort of cheating here because, man, being one and having researched this extensively over the past 60-odd years, we're only interested in about three things.
Well, I mean...
So I got a 50%, and you covered one, which is food, so I got like a 50% chance.
Well, I know what you're getting at, but it's not so much that. It's more particular tastes. I'll give you a hint. It's like, well, I've got a craving for a Reuben and someone Reubenesque.
In other words, if I crave fatty food, I want a generous-sized young lady.
That's exactly right. The research team from Coastal Carolina University approached college students before or after they entered the dining hall, and they quizzed them about their ideal romantic partner. Hungry men are more attracted to women of, shall we say, greater voluptuousness. The scientists explained this phenomenon with something called the environmental security hypothesis.
Also known as Hooters.
No.
Oh.
Although it's funny, you go into Hooters, you want one waitress, you eat, and then you want another. But anyway, the idea is complicated and has to do with evolutionary priorities. But to sum up, men are basically like, I'm starving. Hey, that girl looks like she knows where the bacon is.
And oddly enough, Peter, one day in 1993, Bill Clinton sent out for a sandwich.
There you go.
No, actually, Charlie.
It was a pizza.
It was pizza.
I know.
It was pizza.
I was going with the whole Reuben thing.
I understand.
It was pizza.
Well, this actually explains a long-time mystery that's puzzled people: why Harrison Ford temporarily dumped Calista Flockhart during Ramadan. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and our upcoming shows, for example, November 5th and 6th in Pasadena, California. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ben Fink from Minneapolis.
Ben Fink, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm okay. Did that last name cause you any problems growing up?
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, I'm not going to bring them up now, though. Well, welcome to our show, Ben. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each of them. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
Hit me.
All right. Here's your first limerick.
In Manhattan, who roots through our junk? It might be a stray late-night drunk. To go by the smell, I really can't tell. But the fur and the stripe point to...
skunk.
Yes, indeed. According to the New York Times, skunks are taking over the Big Apple. One New Yorker said, quote, there's so many in it.
What do you mean, are taking
yeah,
over?
Yeah, well, not metaphorical ones, literal ones. Literal skunks.
Literal
one
skunks.
New Yorker said, quote, there are so many now, they are like the squirrels. Welcome or not, the skunks have quickly acclimated to New York. Several have applied for and received their taxi licenses. Others have started to complain about the bridge and tunnel skunks crowding the best dumpsters. While others have even been spotted going up to neighborhood bodegas and saying, nice smelling store you got here. Shame if something got sprayed on it. They're tough, those New York skunks, let me tell you. All right, very good. Here is your next limerick.
You fly up, but your mood is so down. There's less gravity. Get it? Don't frown. You're up here in space. Put a smile on your face. What you astronauts need is a...
Yeah, I'm going to need a hint.
Well, let's hear that limerick again. The hints are in it if you listen to the words and listen for the run.
You fly up, but your mood is so down. There's less gravity. Got it? Don't frown. You're up here in space. Put a smile on your face. What you astronauts need is a...
Ground?
Ground? No. Rhymes with down and frown?
Yeah.
Smile on your face?
Scary
rhymes
when you're a kid?
Down and frown.
Let me take a detour into PJ psychoses.
No. Very hard to get the visor down over the big red nose.
Which he's actually wearing.
A clown.
A clown. Be a clown. Say a clown.
Read that one again.
No. We got it now. The clown. The International Space Station is nice, sure, but up until now, it's been missing one essential thing. The space clown.
Oh, God.
Cheer up, astronauts. Cirque du Soleil founder Guy La Liberté is on his way. La Liberté, who specializes in stilt walking and fire eating, that'll work, will be the first Canadian space tourist. He'll start his space routine when his ship arrives at the station, and whoops, 20 clowns climb out. La Liberté is also planning a hilarious mime routine about being trapped in a tiny airless chamber. The astronauts, in turn, are planning to put him in a tiny airless chamber. All right, here is your last limerick.
Since their skill for romance is innate, the Department of Health set me straight. They advise not to wait and get hitched with a mate about halfway through the first
date.
Right. Hello, we're from the government, and we're here to help you hook up. The Department of Health and Human Services has launched twoofus.org, a website designed to give those singles some dating tips and, quote, increase confidence that marriage is a viable option, unquote. The site offers...
Dating government?
It's dating government dating advice.
Government dating advice.
Site offers tried and true advice. So be yourself. Be attentive. Why would he buy the cow if he gets the milk for free? The site...
Because there's a subsidy, damn it.
The site may be a bit too... The site may be a bit too complex for most lovelorn daters because although it's fun to take a dating quiz to find your perfect love match, it's less fun submitting a form 1038G part F in triplicate just to get to first base. Carl, how did Ben do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Ben, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done. Congratulations, Ben.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for playing. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Charlie Pierce and PJ O'Rourke each has 3 points. Kerry O'Connor has 1.
All right.
Here he.
WTF.
What? You want to take a trip to Wisconsin? It's not that bad, Kerry. Stay here. See how you do.
All right, Kerry, Kerry.
They like me in Wisconsin.
All right, Kerry, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill in the blank. The U.S. and its allies met with blank in Geneva to discuss its nuclear program.
Iran.
Right. Arrested in Switzerland as he arrived for the Zurich Film Festival, blank swore to fight extradition to the U.S.
Roman Polanski.
Right. Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and speechwriter blank died at age 79.
William Safire.
Right. Ken Lewis, the embattled CEO of blank, will receive $53 million when he retires at the end of the year.
Bank of America.
Right. To stay open in spite of the bad economy, Wildlife Safari in Oregon is raising money by opening a blank.
A petting zoo.
An elephant car wash. New cast member Jenny Slate accidentally dropped an F-bomb during the season premiere of Blank.
Saturday Night Live.
Right. Television network TLC stopped production on the reality show Blank after John Gosselin sent them a cease and desist order.
Kate plus eight.
John and Kate plus eight. Yeah, that's Kate plus eight. A poll of 15,000 women found Germans were the world's worst lovers because they were too blank.
Straightforward.
No. Although that would probably be true. They'd say things like, I'm sorry, but you are too fat and I am not hungry enough. No, the answer is they were too smelly. True. The results were a rude awakening for German men, but they didn't fare much worse than the rest of the world's men, who are all pretty much bad news, according to the survey. The woman found English men to be too lazy, Greek men too soppy, Scottish men too loud, Welsh men too selfish, and Russian men too hairy. The 15,000 women immediately descended on Spain, Italy, and Brazil, where apparently the only decent men in the world live.
American men.
American men did not do well. I don't remember what they said about us, but they didn't like us.
I remember everything that's been said about me. Two wives. I could tell, but we don't have time.
Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Kiri had a fine round, Peter. 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 13 points, and Kiri has the lead.
Excellent. All right. We have flipped a coin. PJ's elected to go next. So, here you go. Fill in the blank. An earthquake led to American Samoa being hit with a devastating blank on Tuesday.
I can never say it. Tidal wave.
Right. Tsunami. President Obama revealed a plan to improve education by lengthening the school day and making blank shorter.
Making blank shorter. My disposable income.
No. Summer vacation. Critics were outraged that the Empire State Building was lit in red and yellow in celebration of the 60th anniversary of communist blank.
China.
Right. A story in the UK Metro about a scientific study headlined Sex Inspires Females to Do Chores was accompanied by the subtitle blank.
Kidding.
No, it said, please note, this only applies to fruit flies. Lucy... So don't try it at home, people. Lucy Vaden, once the young girl who was the inspiration behind the song Blank, passed away this week.
Truly got me there.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. She was a friend of John Lennon's son. After an investigation, the Secret Service determined that a juvenile was behind an assassination poll about Obama that appeared on Blank.
Facebook.
Right. After she got fed up with her grandmother asking her to run errands around the house, a 10-year-old British girl, Blank,
went on Facebook and put a poll about whether her grandmother should be assassinated.
No, close. She tried to auction her grandmother on eBay.
So close and yet so far away.
Zoe Pemberton of Clacton, Essex, put her grandmother on sale, but to be fair, she was provoked, said Zoe. She kept asking me to do things like make her a drink. I was on the laptop and suddenly thought I'd put Nan on eBay. I didn't know how much we'd get for her, maybe 99 pence. But she is very good at word searches. Evie said that while her grandmother did seem like a good deal, you're not allowed to sell people. Carl, how did PJ do?
PJ had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. He now has 9 points, but Kiri still has the lead.
All right, then.
13. All right, Kiri.
So how many, then, does Charlie need to win the game?
Charlie needs 5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
All right. Here we go, Charlie. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Last Sunday, voters in Germany re-elected Chancellor Blank.
Angela Merkel.
Right. Florida Democrat Alan Grayson refused to apologize for saying that if you get sick, Republicans want you to blank.
Die quickly.
Exactly. Michelle Obama talked to Elmo and Big Bird about gardening and eating healthy foods on an episode of Blank scheduled to air in November.
Sesame Street.
Right. After a deal with Penske Automotive Group broke down, General Motors announced it will shut down the Blank brand.
Saturn.
Right. A Georgia woman called the police after 2 teenagers broke into her house and stole Blank.
Her husband.
No, 20 fruit roll-ups. For the first time since he landed his plane in the Hudson River, pilot Blank returned to the air.
Sully.
Sully Sullenberger, yes. According to autopsy reports from the L.A. County Coroner, before his overdose, Blank was a healthy 50-year-old.
Michael Jackson.
Right. A London student was shocked to find her late-night snack of gefilte fish blanking.
Swimming away.
No, glowing in the dark.
Oh!
Jessica Taylor returned home at 2 or 3 a.m. She was starving, and as her father tells it, she went to the fridge and reached for a snack, only to find the gefilte fish aglow. In her words, quote, it was brighter than a glow stick. A spokesperson for the deli where the fish was bought said, quote, well, sometimes the fish eats some phosphorus and it glows. It's good for you, unquote. Whether or not that's true, it does make it easier for Jewish mothers across the land who are sitting in the dark waiting for you to call. Don't mind me. I'll just sit here next to the gefilte fish.
Reading my book.
By its light. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He needed 6 to win outright, and he had 6 correct answers. So with 15 points, Charlie Pierce is this
Well done, Charlie.
Congratulations.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what shocking revelations Sarah Palin's memoir will hold. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and LendingTree with the innovative Loan Coach, which provides personalized financial advice for every step of the lending process at LendingTree.com. The George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at Edutopia.org. And CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircare Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ashley Rayfeld. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Hunchdover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what is Sarah Palin's book going to reveal? Charlie Pierce.
Subjects, verbs, objects, and on page 390, an adverb.
Kerry O'Connor.
Well, after page 100, it's completely blank.
And PJ O'Rourke.
She's having John Edwards' love child.
Well, if any of that is in the pages of Sarah Palin's book, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Kerry O'Connor, PJ O'Rourke, Charlie Pierce. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week in Boston, Massachusetts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.